Welcome back to Trauma Queen presents The Trauma Within. Today we are talking to one of my favorite redheads. When you leave here today, you're also going to be like, also one of my favorite redheads. Her name is Lenora Claire, dubbed the Erin Brockovich of stalking by Vice. Lenora seeks to find purpose in trauma by way of advocating for others as a public face of stalking in America. Lenora began to speak out not only for herself, but for the other 13.5 million Americans being targeted after she became the fixation of a dangerous stalker. Although her story went viral and was featured on 48 Hours, People, Yahoo News, TMZ, Daily Mail, CBS News, and other media outlets, Lenora began to realize that despite the attention it was receiving and a mountain of credible threats, law enforcement was still unable to provide the rapid intervention required. It was then that Lenora took measures to capture her stalker herself, leading to his successful felony conviction in 2018. A founding member of the Los Angeles District Attorney Crime Victims Advisory Board and graduate of the FBI Los Angeles Citizens Academy, Lenora now advises on the needs and best practices for survivors of gender-based violence, an example, sexual assault, domestic violence, and stalking. As a survivor, Lenora helps navigate others through the complex world of law enforcement, the judicial system, and the healing process. She has helped countless people obtain restraining orders, served as a human shield in court, and worked on legislative proposals delivered to Congress. Lenora frequently speaks out as an expert on subjects of risk management at schools and on television, as well as podcasts. She also works as a consultant on television and film productions, advocating for victims and their families to ensure respectful depictions of the most traumatic and vulnerable moments. So, buckle up. Here's Lenora. You're one of my favorite people that somehow we have connected. So my first question to everyone is, we've already read your bio. People got the scoop, but I like to hear people's explanations of themselves. So who are you?
Wow. I'm a lot. I'm just a lot. I am somebody who cares very deeply for other people. I'm somebody who likes to have a good time. I don't identify first and foremost as a survivor, but since we're here, I am a survivor. That's a huge part of my identity. I'm an activist, somebody who's worked my whole life in entertainment, so I can't pretend like that's not a part of who I am too. And I'm somebody who's deeply grateful that I'm still here. There's a lot of things that happen to me where I should not be here, and I am here, and I'm reminded of that daily. And for that gift, I really try to make the most of whatever that I can. I try to find joy in spaces and also meaning in spaces. I'm a little dog person. That is definitely a big part of who I am. That is my personality. I'm a little dog mom. I hope my friends would say that I'm a good friend, because that's something that means a lot to me, and I care a lot about all of them. And I don't know. I'm a goof. People always know me. They're always like, I think because like my public identity in recent years has been with like a lot of heavy subject matter. So I think people think like, you know, like I'm this like, you know, this like fighter, which is cool. But like really, you know, like when we hang out, like we laugh a lot, you know? And I think people, when they get to spend real time with me, they're like, oh, you're really goofy. Like that's a thing. Yeah. So that too.
Yeah. How did we meet? I like to ask like people's versions, because sometimes I'm like, oh, is that what happened? How do we meet? What is your version of how we met each other?
We met because everybody said your name. Your name was like everybody's mouth. Everybody was like, but you don't know her? You don't know her? Like you just, everyone was sending me to you like all the time. And I think I just reached out. I think I was just like, okay, I started like following you. So I guess we could use fan. I don't know. That's a really weird word. I don't know. Admirer from afar, but it was because mutuals that are friends or, you know, call, whatever, your name was everywhere. And people were just like, they acted like we already knew each other, because they would reference. Yes. And I was like, okay, like let's, I think I just reached out. I think I said something like, let's be friends. I think it was something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Probably. I mean, for sure, we was in each other's DMs, and people used to be like, you don't know Lenora? And I'm like, who the fuck is a Lenora? And they're like, the one with the red hair. And I'm like, okay, I have seen her because your hair. Very distinct. Very distinct. For those that don't know, how long, because I know this, how long have you been this red?
Okay, so doing the math, 1995, 15 years old, I had big old boobies. And I think I just, at that point, like, well, it's a couple things. It was Grace Jones in the movie Vamp. She had this hair, and Kate Pearson from the B-52s. And like, I loved both of them. So I was really drawn to it. And you know, when you're a teenager and you got big old boobies and you're the girl with the boobs, I was like, you know, like I wanted to, like, I'll be the girl with the hair. And then I was the girl with the hair, and that like just worked out better for me. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the girl with the boobs, we've all been, well, not all of us, but I've been there.
The two of us.
Yes. We've been there. Yeah. So let's get into this. We today are talking about many things. We're going to be talking about stalking. It's January. You are my January guest because it is Stalker Awareness Month. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about many things. We're also going to talk about some icks, because there are icks in this true crime world. We're going to talk about it. But what does trauma mean to you?
Yeah. I'm going to give a simple explanation for a very complex thing. And the simplest explanation of trauma, it's injury, whether it's physical or emotional, is something that has wounded us, right? Again, that's the simplest description of the most complicated thing. Yeah. But that's, yeah, if you ask me, that's how I define it.
Yeah. What is your relationship to stalking?
Yeah. So I, again, you know, comfortable however anyone wants to define themselves as victim or survivor. Today I use survivor, but it catch me on certain days, I call myself a victim. It started in 2011. I was living a really different life than I am now. In 2011, I just opened up my art gallery. It was like a really exciting time in my life. I was successful in art. If anyone knows how hard that is, it was a very hard thing. And I was one of the LA Weekly People of the Year, which was exciting. That's my hometown, you know. Amazing. And again, we're not here to stigmatize people with psych issues, but it's kind of important just in explaining my story. There was a man who was schizoaffective, that is bipolar and schizophrenic, who had been stalking, of all people, Ivanka Trump. Again, 2011, the Trumps meant something different to us then. And like, he had tried to kill himself in her store in New York. He'd been arrested for stalking her. I don't know this. I'm in LA. I'm living my life. I'm having a good time. And, yeah, you know, he's causing all kinds of problems for her in New York. And he gets arrested. He jumps bail. He comes to LA. He opens up the LA Weekly. As I said, I was People of the Year. He sees this great portrait of me holding a capuchin monkey that I'm friends with. So it's kind of like a fun picture. He becomes intrigued by me. He comes to my gallery. He's wearing a spacesuit. And, you know, when you work with artists and eccentrics, like, you embrace, like, whatever. Like,
okay, regular. It's LA. Yeah.
Spaceman, cool, whatever. So we're talking and I can tell he's very intelligent, but kind of off. And then he looks at, yeah, me and he's like, you look like Jessica Rabbit. I was like, oh, people say, you look like Lulu from The Fifth Element. I'm like, okay. And then he looks you right in the eye and it's like so chilling now. And he goes, I'm going to stalk you. I was like, what? And I got really uncomfortable and I just kicked him out of the gallery. And like, I just didn't really think much of it until a couple days later. This was like the era of the blogs. Remember, like all the entertainment blogs. And my friends were like messaging me going, oh my God, that weird dude that you kicked out, he's actually Ivanka Trump's stalker. And the Trumps have hired bounty hunters to like extradite him. I'm like, what the hell? And so
that's a lot.
Right, it's a lot. So he like goes to jail in Rikers Island for stalking Ivanka and starts sending me these like really insane ramblings. And at first they weren't threats. They were just kind of nonsensical, like fantasy, whatever. So it was like a little disturbing, you know, especially because it was my physical place of work, you know, and like these long, like just bags, pages of letters. And then very quickly started to escalate to graphic sexual assault, kidnapping, and death threats to me, like very explicit. And so I go to police because at this point in my life, I thought they were going to help me. And
trick. That's wild.
Yeah, it was a different time. It was a naive time back then. And I come in with this like stack of horrifying threats from somebody with a long criminal record, a long history, very well documented, with the expectation that they would care. And Northeast Division LAPD, I always name them, they not only did they not care, they told me to dye my hair so I wouldn't be recognizable, get off the internet. And that was advice to me, to send me on my way. They really had no interest in helping me or doing anything. They just said, you know, do these things, good luck to you. And so I really didn't know what to do with that. And so I just kind of left. And then as he was out of jail at this point and sending me emails. And at that point was when I started to learn how to like track IP, because this man bounced all over the country. So I was like, okay, well, I have to learn what to do to protect myself, because they're not going to help me. And so like, if he was in a different state, I could like breathe that day. If he's in California, I was terrified. And then it started to like escalate even more, right? And then it got to the point where I, because you don't realize when you're being stalked, they infiltrate all parts of your life, you know, your personal life. So I actually gave up my successful gallery because I was so scared of coming to work and him killing me and knowing where I was. So that's when I started working in reality television. I was working in a casting office, and, you know, really just, I had to, people just think about what you do for your dollars. You can't do anything. I also, at that point, I was hosting nightclubs too. So all of that, like my peers that I was hosting clubs with, they now own like the biggest clubs in LA. Like I could have had that life if that was right. So the, another thing I gave up, which was also a good time. So I start working in reality TV. I have this amazing mentor. I'm working there for a little bit, and he starts sending death threats to my boss. And when you work in a casting office, you know, people come in and out and everyone's so afraid of like workplace violence. So it's not unreasonable that my coworkers were terrified. And I ended up, you know, when you work entertainment and a lot of jobs, you're freelance. So they can't like legally fire you, but when you're freelance, they just don't renew you. You don't come. So I lost my job. And I don't know if your listeners are like me. It's one thing if you mess with me, that's terrible. But if you mess with people that I care about, I'm really spun out. That's when it really gets to me. Yeah. So having my boss who gave me this whole career, like, have this happen to you. So I go back to police, who were even worse to me this time. I'm like, he's sending death threats. He's like, he's calling my boss. Like, it's please help me. And they just were even worse. And then I have to talk about this moment too. And you're going to laugh at it. I have this friend, my friend Zarin, and I had lunch with him that day. And I'm telling him like, oh my God, like police are horrible to me. I can't believe this is happening. And he just looks at me and he kind of like laughs in my face. And I realized at that moment, like, wait, did I just tell a black man that the cops weren't going to help me? And he's like, we tell our kids different things than you tell your kids. And I was like, okay. And that was, and I always talk about this story because we all have to be aware of our blind spots, right? Like the things that we learn. And that was a long time ago. And since I've, you know, I have a much greater understanding, but I just bring that up because, you know, there's just certain bits of privilege that we have that we may not be aware of. And this sort of realization at that moment, like, you know, I have this mountain of privilege and this is how I'm being treated. So how is everybody else being treated? Like it was a real eye opener and I got pissed and I realized, wait, I work in entertainment. I have all this access. So I also understand my privilege that at that moment, this is also 2015. Whew, wasn't that long ago. 2015. So prior to Me Too. And I need to explain that for the timeline because I started doing TV in 2015 to get attention for my case and for how people are treated. And that was prior to Me Too, which is not that it's a great time ever for survivors. We're really not supported the way that we need to be.
Ever. The culture ever in life.
We never are. But the culture was even worse, if you can imagine, you know, back then. So when I came out and I was doing TV shows, I started doing talk shows, telling my story. Again, I was getting people tweeting at me like, dress how you want to be addressed. It's your hair. It's your attention seeking. And it was really sad and messed up because I had a lot of internalized misogyny happening. A lot of some of the worst things I was getting were coming from women. And that like really shocked me. But I started doing media and calling out not only my stalker because I was so scared, but all of the systems that were failing me. And that's when like my activism really started kicking off because at this point, like any judge would issue me a restraining order. I had all of that, but it's people don't realize how hard it is to serve the restraining order. And it doesn't go into effect until you get served, which is why I started asking, wait, if you can send me a death threat over email, why can't I return a restraining order over email to you? Like we have all kinds
same of- Same thing. You're like, same thing.
We have all kinds of legal precedent for, you know, digital documents working in this manner, you know, foreclosure notices, things like that. So I started going, wait a second, like not only am I pissed and freaked out, but like I have some ideas for solutions for things. And so through a friend of mine who's a famous actress, this again, lots of privilege here, she connected me to Congressman Adam Schiff, who in 2015 I started working with and kind of coming up with proposals. And he was so generous and giving of his time. People don't realize that like he helped write a grant for in Glendale, there's a rape testing kit facility that has a grant that he wrote. Like he's awesome. He was so wonderful. He brought me into the then district attorney. the then chief of police. Like I'm having all the, a congressman is walking me into the chief of police and still nobody's helping me. Like, what is this? So that's when my story started to kind of go viral in a way. Like when I said that it did, like Vice did a story on me. They called me the Erin Brockovich of stalking. And that like, I mean, that's a lot to live up to, but that went like really far and wide. And I started doing restraining orders for other people because I was able to get mine. I was finally able to get mine served because he threatened to sexually assault another woman and was detained, not arrested, detained by police. And they saw it pending in the computer and they served him. And then at that moment, I thought like, yay, we're all going to be wrapped up nicely. No, no, no. By the time my arrest happened, which we'll get into that crazy story, I had 4,000 violations of my restraining order, all of which should have been arrested.
That were just on him.
They were just, yeah, for him, to me. And 4,000 times he should have been arrested and they just didn't do anything. So 2016 happens, right? We're back in this timeline. And he gets arrested for something else, right? And I get this call. So Trump wins. We're all devastated. Trash. We're all right. Sorry to bring us back to that moment, but that is.
It might come back if we're being honest.
Let's
keep it. We've had this conversation.
So Trump wins. You know, we're all in this nightmare. I'm walking my other little dog who used to know me. I'm walking her. I'm literally picking up her dog shit. I get a phone call and it says Secret Service and LAPD. And I'm like, I literally say, who the fuck is this? I mean, I think this is like somebody clowning me. It was nobody clowning me. It was my real actual life. And they called to tell me that my stalker, during transport, he's being transported to a psych facility, managed to escape. And now that Ivanka is the first daughter, it's now a Secret Service issue and they're looking for him, but they wanted to like give me a heads up.
That's so nice.
Right. And so I start like joking, like, am I the one person to benefit from this crazy Trump presidency? Did I win the stalking lottery? They're going to do something. But that's not really what happened. So he gets arrested a block away from Trump Tower in New York in a state he's not even allowed to be in. So I'm thinking he's going to get some real time. But New York has really trash laws. And I believe the stalking was only a misdemeanor. So he gets out right away and he's fixated on me big time. All about me, right? And it's scary. He stalks a lot of people. So he kind of go, but at this moment, it was all about me. And he's writing me and he's telling me, and again, this whole time, I'm doing restraining orders for other people. I'm learning how to remove trackers from cars. Like, I'm just like, I'm getting in the mix and I'm
still set, built.
Yeah, like I'm doing all this stuff, but like, no one's helping. I'm basically trying to be what I needed for other people. And I'm like learning all these skills, which is, it gets into my journey of how I'm like almost,
we're going to get there. It's going to be so fun. We'll get there.
Yeah. So I'm also now with, they're called the TMU, the Threat Management Unit, which is supposed to be this like fancy elite stalking unit at the LAPD. And I will say I had one amazing detective, Cletus Carlton, who now I have a company with, but you know what? Cletus retired. And once I lost him, I didn't have shit and everybody else so bad. So my stalker is writing me, telling me he's going to kidnap me from LA Comic Con, which he did not know that in a weird twist, I actually know the owners of LA Comic Con. And so I work with them. The kids were never at risk. I have to say the security was amazing. We worked together. We hired extra security. We dressed them up as Batman and Superman. And so when he came to kidnap me, they held him down because that's Batman and Superman held him down. I had to catch my own stalker and then deliver him to LAPD. Okay. That's insane. And that's great, what happened. I know. And
how many times have you had to do that?
Catch him?
Yeah.
I mean, well, that was like the biggest. I mean, but other times I've had to like locate him or help other people get their restraining order. I mean, I don't even know how many because I literally have lost track. Like the entirety of WME, the agency, has a restraining order against him because he threatened to blow them up because of Kim Kardashian. So like, I can't tell you how many people. I mean, there's this amazing woman who's ex-CIA, ex-FBI, who he was threatening her child, who I've helped. Like, it's like all the time, right? But that was the biggest, you know. So I get him caught, arrested, $1 million bail, which is like unheard of. And then, Kim Kardashian gives her a restraining order. I help because I thought that Kim Kardashian's security team was going to catch him, but that's not who it was. It was me, right? This like weirdo who works in reality TV. I don't know. And then Gwyneth Paltrow serves a restraining order. I didn't even know Gwyneth Paltrow was in the mix, no one's really told me the whole story, but just sort of from news articles, there was some incident with her children at school that he did that was upsetting. So there's something there. And so then it was a year until we were supposed to have my trial, and there was no kidnapping charge because he wasn't successful in forcibly removing my body 10 feet off the property. So we didn't get that. But we were about to have my trial, and, you know, we could talk all day about what victim impact statements are and like what that means and that whole process. Yeah. Right. And I always tell survivors, like, it's never going to be how you think it is. Like, nope. don't set yourself up for this expectation, because there's going to be some weird whoop around. It's just the way that works. And my weird Absolutely. Whoop around was I showed up for the day of my trial. I'm walking up the courthouse steps, and my DDA, the deputy district attorney, who I do like a lot, but he comes down and he's like, we're going to do a plea. I was like, excuse me? He's like, yeah. We're going to do felony stalking max. And because we're going to get you felony stalking max, which is great, there's no reason to do victim impact, because it's just, you can't compel a judge to get more time. We threw out some of the other felonies, but we're going to make him a felon. He's never been a felon before. And there's no reason for you to speak, because it's going to wind him up more. And I was like, okay. And like, I didn't really have a choice. Like because trials are very expensive. So if they want to do a plea, that's kind of what's
happening. There's nothing to do.
So I was like, okay. And I didn't realize at the time, there's a proposition in California that I talk about a lot called 57. And I get why 57 passed. You know, it's put out there as reduced sentencing for nonviolent offenders, which is great. And I am for that, because I am for reform. I don't like how things are. It's a very tricky place to be a progressive person, but also be a crime victim, right? Like,
there's so much.
A whole other conversation, you know, like, why is it so black and white? Why is it everybody locked up or nobody locked up? I don't know. But because of 57, what's tricky is, while it's really great for some things, what it's not great for is what California can consider as a nonviolent crime, which shocks people, but the crimes as followed are considered nonviolent. Rape of an unconscious person, for sodomy, human trafficking, and stalking. So with that, I got the felony max, 4 years, automatically cut in half because of 57, so serving two. And 1 year was already in jail waiting, so it was like only one more year until he was going to get out. So I am in the tiny, okay, so
you said
I was
big time.
Yeah, and like, just to give some stalking stats, and again, super underreported. We don't really know, because so many communities don't come forward, they don't report.
Before you even get into that, what is stalking? And I think that people, you and I talk about, we talk all day, every day about all kinds of shitty things, but like, people get lost in like what stalking actually is. Also, you know, buzzwords, people just like to use things. Could you define that and then get back into your journey?
Yeah. So every state has a slightly different legal definition, but the one that's kind of the most broadly accepted, it is two or more unwanted attempts at contact that give a person a reasonable expectation that they are in danger, or they are in fear, or they're being intimidated. Right.
Okay.
So when I explain it that way, people go, oh, and they realize,
oh shit,
to them. Right. So,
yeah.
Tricky thing in that wording is, a lot of states say a reasonable person, which is messed up, because a lot of times they downplay us, right? And they go, you're not being reasonable. And with that, because states have like threat codes, and we can talk a bit about Counterman, which is a trash, in my opinion, Supreme Court ruling, which is all about intent and threat. And so, for example, the Counterman ruling, which was just done by Supreme Court, there was a convicted stalker out in Colorado who was stalking a young female musician. And he felt that his right to send her threats, to send her death threats, to not be able to do this is a violation of his First Amendment right. And they ruled in his favor. And
so fucking disgusting.
Yeah. And when you get deep into it, it has to do with the intent. And where that's a problem is where you have like a really deluded stalker like mine, who's like the most dangerous. You know, his counsel could argue, well, he's deluded. He thinks they're married. He's not really trying to scare her. And with this new Counterman ruling, right? So now you have, it's already hard enough to get cops to care. It's hard enough to get the restraining order. And so now you have this ruling, which is about like threats. So with stalking, a lot of it, like, and I'll give another example. Like when we were doing my case, like, and again, sorry, I don't know if I need to give a trigger warning. This is a little upsetting what I'm going to delve into, but my stalker, his fantasy is to sexually assault me, but to do it using Zyklon B, which is what was used to kill my relatives in the Holocaust, to gas me through my door, is like a very specific fantasy he talks about a lot.
Does he know that you're Jewish?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they won't count that as a hate crime, whatever. I
ask. That's wild.
They just don't. It's targeted, right? It's targeted. And he says all kinds of anti-Semitic stuff, and he talks about the Holocaust a lot. That's all there. so much fun with the like incel racist, all the, again, when this all happened, we didn't have the language for incel. We do now. That is what my stalker is. I have to be very clear about that. That is his situation. But so we were putting together the evidence, and this is, I sort of explained this to people that my DDA said to me, I was like, okay, well, we'll put the death threats in. And he's like, well, he specifically talks about killing you with Zyklon B. Like, how is he going to get Zyklon B? And I was like, wait, he can read how to make gas on the internet. Like, that's not really a thing. And they actually threw that out, but they did use my sexual assault stuff because in his language to me, he said, well, I do think he could use his penis like a weapon. So even, I know, there's so much about it. I know.
What?
And again, I'm somebody who's been sexually assaulted. So,
yeah,
you know, that's another thing. A lot of us multi-survivors, we have this additional trauma, right? And so the fear when someone's telling me they're going to rape me when I've already been raped, you know, it's, there's so many layers.
There's layers and levels for sure.
So many. And so when it comes to stalking, like with the threat, the difficulty with prosecuting stalking, besides there's a lot of difficulties, but one of the biggest ones is a lot of it is the threat of a crime which has not happened yet, right? Yeah. It's not like other, right? So a lot like the police, let's be clear, the police are not here to prevent crime. They're here to investigate crimes that have already happened.
Yes.
Okay. So there's
people don't understand that.
Right. They don't understand that. And they are not trained to do risk assessment. So when you come in, they can't, they literally, it's not even their fault. They're not trained to know the difference between harassment and shit talk and Molly, you and danger girl. They don't know. So they just kind of throw you off. So that's one of the things I've been advocating for is to have like forensic psych that could be on site to evaluate your threats. Because like an example, like with my stalker, he depersonalizes me. I'm an object. And a very famous forensic psychologist talked about how because I'm an object, way more likelihood of violence, right? And so there's just even things in the language that like regular law enforcement doesn't know to pick up on. So, yeah. So that in a nutshell, that is what stalking is. There's so many barriers to justice. It's a really misunderstood crime. I say it's like sexual assault in the 70s. It's a weird crime. It can look really differently for a lot of people. There's, you know, a lot of populations don't want to deal with law enforcement, but also don't know how to name stalking. That's like another huge thing, you know, and yeah, there's a huge, you know, DV overlap, but we're seeing with the new stats, it used to be like 90% former intimate partner, 10% stranger acquaintance. And now because of the internet, it's like 50-50. So even who it's happened. And the other thing I have to always say about stalking is both the victims and the perpetrators, it can be anybody. Like people have this idea of who it looks like. No, it happens to everyone. It's done by everyone.
Yep. I know you
more men are doing it, but
it is. But it, I think that's the reminder when they try to just say it's this person, it's this person you should look out for. It's the weird person. We're all the fucking weird people. Okay. So that's not like a valid, it's LA. If you're not in LA and if you are in LA, you get it. You have been everywhere. Like I've known you to do different interviews. Yeah. I know you went on that Raggedy Doctor show, Philip.
I did Dr. Oz.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I denied Dr. Phil. They were actually,
let's talk about this though. The reason you weren't on Philip's show because trash.
So because I am also a TV producer, right? Like I know how this works. And at the time, yeah, like I knew he was questionable, but I needed my story out there. Like he hadn't been arrested. I was getting told I was gonna get killed every day. So I'm really desperate. So just remember that. A lot of these people, they pray, especially when it's like families of missing persons, like they just want a cold case. They just want help. So you're desperate. And even if they're not really your cup of tea, you're like, they have a 2 million audience, 2 million people hear my story. So I was thinking about doing it and they started asking me all of these questions, things that just didn't feel right. And I just got in my gut. I went, oh my God, you're going to ambush me with this family. And so I did not do the show because that was clearly what they were intending to do, which, you know, I did 48 hours and 48 hours, you know, on one level, great opportunity, 17 million people watched it. Okay. That's wonderful. And some of the producers are nice people and well-intentioned people, but they're used to working homicides and not living survivors. And definitely not, my case at that point was unadjudicated. Really important. Yeah. I did, you know, they could have really, so what they did is
what
they
does that mean?
Unadjudicated means it has not gone to trial. It has not been, there's no conviction. So Right. So this was just kind of, you know, I think restraining order had been served at that point, but there was no arrest. There was nothing. So what 48 Hours chose to do is, without asking me, without my consent, they interviewed my stalker. Now, the positive, I know, Josh, positive is that I now have this insane footage, right? I have him on camera, boogers hanging out of his nose, freaking out, screaming, threatening to kill me. Like, I have the evidence. Like, nobody has this. I have it. But what it did was it riled him up. And maybe I would have said yes. Maybe I would have said, but I didn't even know. I did not have the opportunity. Okay. Because they just wanted this. Right. And so that that's what I believe is what got him excited and made him, you know, really rile him up to attempt to kidnap me, which happened shortly later. Right. So that's why I started my company. We could talk about the work that we do there. Because
we will. We will.
I'm a producer and a survivor and an advocate. And so I existed in this weird space where when I started meeting other high profile survivors who told their story, I realized that the harm that was done to me was not unique. Everybody had some variant of where production just did something wild and to an already vulnerable, traumatized population created further trauma for what, you know, for these producers to make this content. And again, I don't shit on people who watch true crime. I watched true crime before I was true crime. I understand. Sure. But it's just, you know, it's the conception, it's the why, it's the what are we doing for the people impacted? Are we doing anything? Are we just profiting off of them? Like, there's and how we handle them, you know.
You know what? Since we're here, let's stick in this true crime ick. I have an abundance of questions, but the true crime ick. Technically, you know, I don't talk about it as much as my rape, but I am also a true crime survivor, right? Like, I've learned a lot because I'm also a consumer. I study people's brains. You know, I've been in psychology my whole life, and I watch things, I read things because I want to know how the fuck we got here. You know, like, why are these people doing this thing? But because of my work with you now and like being your friend, like, I've learned so much more, and I feel like now I have so many true crime icks that like I can't even consume it anymore. Will I still watch a cult documentary? Absolutely, because it's still studying brains. It's a different journey. You know this for me. But like, what are some of the true crime icks that you have experienced? Conferences, like cons.
Oh yeah, yeah. The first thing I so terribly want to name these two individuals. They've had their own scandal. They have their own problems. But you know, there was somebody that I considered a friend for a long time who made what I considered to be a really tacky show about stalking. And they went to the stalker's door with cameras when this case was unadjudicated. And some of the victims wanted that and some of them didn't. And that could have really jeopardized their case. And it really spun one of the survivors out a lot, so much that she was suicidal. She was really upset. Right. Yeah. And so I called him and I was like, you know what happened to me with 48 hours? Like, why would you do that? And he, in his arrogance, he said to me, he was like, I'm a journalist. I have to tell both sides of the story. I was like, well, did you do risk assessment to know how much risk these individuals are? Like, what are you doing? Like, he really believed in his arrogance. Right. And these people are not real journalists. Okay. They're just not. They don't have that credibility. They don't have the ethical standard. So they just playing games to get that, you know,
with people's lives.
Right. And then the woman on that project, when they interviewed me for something, which is like a whole other thing, you know, I will admit this. I'm somebody who's worked in media for a very long time. I've told my story many times. You could go as far as to say that I'm polished in telling my story. I'm media trained. So I'm also deep into my story. There are times early on when, yes, you would have authentically gotten my tears. You would have gotten that frustration, but I'm at a different place. I'm at a place now where I'm the person that people come to for help. I've gone through many cycles of my emotions. And this woman like was like, I know you've told your story so many times, but can you do it? She wanted me to cry. She wanted my white lady tears. I know what this was. I could feel it. It was disgusting. And then there's so many times I've been on other shows where they really want that sound bite. So they try to force a narrative that is not real to you for that headline. And that's some bullshit, right? Because this is your legacy. This is your trauma. This is your thing. Like, and they're just really trying to do that. There have been another woman that I know. I'm going to be careful because I don't want to expose her identity. But she was trafficked, but she did not have that language or realize that's what happened to her until she was in a chair in a documentary and they had the lights on her. And they said, so how'd it feel to be trafficked? And she was just like, what? And they're like, well, legally. And they like broke it down. And like, there's no, like, there's just the delivery system. Because again, I worked on a show with people who did a lot of reality stuff, right? And these are the same producers. There is no training camp to get you other than what we're doing. Like, that's why we have this company, so we can train them. But you have people who, okay, you worked on Jersey Shore. That's terrific. But that doesn't
that
mean.
It's not the same. It's not Snooki the same. And them are not the same.
It's not the same. So you have these people who aren't equipped. And then you can get into, there's like a lot. Okay, true crime is not even true crime because the stories that we're seeing.
What is true crime?
Okay, well, true crime, what we're told it is just it's not dramatized. It's supposed to be a factual event. But what I say true crime is not true crime is that if we're looking, it's not all Gabby Petito. It's not all white women with a twist. If we're looking at who is actually being harmed versus the stories that you're seeing, it is not a reflection of who the majority of the harm is happening. So I'm saying true crime is not really true crime. We're seeing, and I'm saying it's a very whitewashed, conventionally attractive woman version of this. And that's like, you're not seeing what you was, who work with her. That's not what we see. So true crime is not true crime. It's true crime is true crime for who they feel is deserving. Right. And then, you know, there's a lot of other microaggressions that we see too. Like, you know, first of all, I'll say it's incredibly jarring as a survivor to see these recreations, like some weird version. And, you know, when they're telling BIPOC stories, I'll just say it, like there's stuff that's like so wild to me where it's like, it don't look like the person. It's like, I'm sorry, not all blank people look the same. You know, there's like, that's produced by white people is what I'm saying. So when you have white people telling stories about communities that they're not a part of, there's a lot of nuance that they're not getting. Right. And so like that, and that to me is like, again, another offense, like layer. There's many ways to go wrong is what I'm saying. And then, you know, when I've taken meetings with a lot of networks and when I say, okay, can we like have line items to get people therapy? Can we try and get, you know, we worked on a project out of the UK where you asked to have the participants who were traumatized evaluated beforehand to make sure they're even okay to go on camera. And that is part of their duty of care, as we now know. That is not standard in the US. And when I ask for that, they're like, that's expensive. And what's going to happen is somebody is going to hurt themselves or somebody else because they had no business being on camera because they're not ready to tell their story. And you force them. I've had producers say to me, well, you want to get ahead of it. We're going to tell it anyway, because once you are in the news, you are
taking a run with it.
You do not have, it does not matter. You know, they can do 3 Lifetime movies about your life if they want to. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. What is autonomy? What is it? It doesn't exist. Like it's individuals that have already been harmed, had their autonomy taken from them. And people are like, well, we're telling your story, but not really realizing they're continuously aiding and abetting what has already happened to this individual. It really is wild.
And when things are court record, like we're having between you and I lots of discussions about the Epstein reveals, right? For example, because my case involves famous names, I'm not famous, but the ancillary other victims are. So when there's court filings and they're named, I've been reported on by like Daily Mail and TMZ who are reporting on my story without talking to me because it's all part. They have people in the courts who are like combing through for like, you know, famous names, right? And so that's what people don't realize, that there's people at the courts that actually, that they make money red flagging. That's how they always know the celebrity divorce before the celebrities want to tell you. But in this case of crime, once you're in these filings, you are out there. You are not protected. And they can just like run with it. And I've had people do my story on podcasts. Like, I'm like, hello, I'm alive. You can DM me. I will talk to you.
Ever reach out and be like, hey girl, it's me?
I did. Actually, I have a funny story about that. I saw, because I have a Google alert on myself, which everybody should.
Right. I should. Everyone should, honestly.
Yeah. And I saw that there was a podcast that did my story and I didn't even listen to it. I just sent them a DM. I was like, what the hell? I'm alive. And then I like listened to it. It was two high school girls. It was two high school girls with their cute little high school voices. And they were like, this girl's so cool. She's a badass. I wrote him the meanest message until I listened to it. And I had to delete it. Because they were like really sweet and they thought it was really cool that I caught my stalker and that I like work with other people. But still, I was like, you guys could have reached out to me. And they're like, yeah. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm like, just don't do that. Like, I'm alive. Like, let me decide if I don't want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. When you, like, you've already told us, you've talked about this over and over again. And, you know, you and I are similar. We just say the thing now. And there's like a disconnect in some ways because it's, mm-hmm. we have moved on in certain ways. Will this exist in us always? Fucking for sure. Especially since he's still looking for you.
Oh, yeah. It's not done. I put him in jail.
It's so many 2024, times. Baby. He's still out here looking for you.
We're not
this
done.
Is fucking wild.
We're not done. Mm. Yeah. People don't realize that. People are always like, I'm so sorry it happened to you. And I'm like, not past tense. Happening. Happening.
He's still. What do you wish people knew about stalking and or your case or true crime? What do you wish people knew? Like you said, it's the internet is so weird. Fucking Crime Con. We've had this conversation. The bloody nails. Bottom line. Like, what do you wish people actually knew?
Sure. The thing I would say first with stalking, besides the fact that it infiltrates all areas of your life, because that's what, you know, they're trying to do, is it's unique from other crimes because of the hypervigilance, because of the ongoing nature. It's like, I've had 20 years to heal from my sexual assault. Yeah, occasionally things happen, but I've had 20 years and I feel like I'm pretty healed with that. Yeah. The stalking, you never get to heal. It is a wound that is constantly being shoved open. And so we all have health problems. Every long-term stalking victim I know, it's like, we're all like, oh, how's your stomach? Like, we all are like the health stuff that it causes, you know, and that's something that we never talk about. We also, as a community, never talk about healing, right? Like, we talk about, people always ask me, like, they're so intrigued by, like, you caught him, he went to jail, but no one ever asked me, like, what are you doing to be okay? Are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's always one of my questions.
You, because it's you, but like, you know what I mean? Like you're like, but like, I'm just saying like regular, like normal people, everybody else is not you that like everybody, they never ask and they never, and I'm like, no, ask me if I'm okay. Don't ask me how many years he got. Cause he got years and he just literally 3 days after he got out of spending 2 years for jail for stalking me, he did it again. He's making videos about me on YouTube. So it was cool that I had like my 2 year reprieve, but like, I'm not safer. I'm not okay. If anything, he's more angry at me now. He was writing letters to me from jail, you know, in jail to me. So again, the hypervigilance, the ongoing nature that stalking has versus other crimes, you know, and also just culturally, we're really messed up with stalking. People like think it, like it's romantic or it's funny or like you're so
weird. Like, not. It's not cute.
It's not cute. No, it's terrible. And then about true crime, the thing about true crime is you really have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of telling the story? And are we honoring the people? Are we doing anything to help them? Or are we just, as producers and networks, just profiting off of more trauma? Or have we done something beneficial? Why? There has to be a why. For what?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. Again, like, if it's a family who wants answers and they have control of this narrative, great. I'm all for it. Please do. You know, but if it's a family that doesn't want to participate, like a lot of these documentaries, then what the fuck are you doing? Let them watch.
People ask more questions, but that takes awareness and accountability. And, you know, people love to dodge that. For folks that do or are listening to this, if you could like sit down with someone, what should they do? Like what would you recommend if they think they're being stalked, or how do they take care of themselves?
Wow. Okay. It's so much. Let's see. The first thing emotionally, I can get into safety tips, but I'll start with some emotional stuff. You need community because a lot of times, even your most like well-meaning, loving friends, they may not know how to show up for you and they can give you well-intentioned advice that's not right. Like one of the things I see a lot is they'll just be like, oh, just block the person. No, that's actually bad advice. That's for harassment. I would not have caught my stalker who told me where he was going to try and kidnap me from had I blocked him. When you're being stalked, you need that evidence. You need to do risk assessment. You need to know, like, are they kind of leaving me alone or are they writing me 100 times a day and like very fixated? So your friend is going to say, just block them. Get it out of your mind. Let's go have some tacos and have a good day. Because that's what your friend wants for you. But they may not understand that, right? So That's what I mean. You need to find community. You need to find other survivors and people who really get you and really understand it, because stalking is such an isolating crime. They're trying to isolate you. They're going to send threats to your friends so that they don't want to be near you, the people that you're dating, your business, whatever. They want to isolate you. And this thing I talk about too, and it's kind of funny because we're about to have, this is the 20th anniversary of National Stalking Awareness Month. And we have to thank Debbie Riddle for that. Debbie, who I'm about to go to do a bunch of stuff in DC with Debbie and this amazing group, because her sister Peggy was murdered 20 years ago. And she created this, and so much activism has come from it. But you know how like all sort of advocacy months have a color? Well, we got sparkle, and sparkle for stalking.
We got sparkle.
And it's to not lose your shine. And I always, it's kind of ironic that they call it like we're doing sparkle, because I always call it my sparkly theory. I think you've heard me say that before, which is something I've noticed when I started meeting stalking survivors, I'd become friends with them. And I was like, oh my God, is it because we're like bound through this weird trauma? And I was like, that's not fair. And that's not accurate. It's that these are all really amazing people. They're charismatic, they're dynamic, they're really talented at whatever their thing is. These are just really interesting people. And I started to realize that these predators want to obtain, possess, and control, all of which they are not, because they are not shit. So of course they want to obtain, possess, and control these fabulous people.
100%. Right?
And that's what 100%. That is. So I also, the other message that I just sort of emotionally, because again, people always want the safety tips, but I'm like, there's more to it. The other thing is, with a lot of this former intimate partner stuff, I see people, especially if there's like kids involved, or, you know, there's a lot of guilt and shame that they carry with them, like because they chose to date this individual, right?
Yeah.
Like I always say to them, you wouldn't judge your friend if that happened to them. Like, be kind to yourself. We've all, who hasn't dated someone they regret? That is dating, right? And, you know, I always say like, it's like if you pet a dog because it's cute, but you didn't know that dog had rabies, right? That's all it is. No. You didn't know. Okay. And so with stalking, when it has that former intimate partner, it's very easy for me to be like, I don't know this nut. I don't know him. And so I don't have that, but I work with so many people who do, and they know you and they're in your head, and it's like so heavy versus a lot of other crimes where there's like a randomness to it. Right. So I just want people to like, do not make it harder on yourself. You need to just free yourself of that. You got enough to deal with. You know, and then also there's just a lot of stuff to be said for kind of common sense safety practices, you know.
Love a common sense safety. Okay, tell us.
You know, like I think I've shown you, like all of our home addresses are on the internet. I can find the car you lease in like 2 seconds. If you pay $1 to these services, they will give you that. So please, like if anyone wants, I can show them how to wipe their address. You know, don't make it easy. Like that's the thing. Posting where you are when you're there. Don't do that. There's a lot of data in our
photos. No live posting.
Don't do it.
Posted days later. Who cares if you were watching the thing that day?
Days later. And the only time that I will do that is like, and I post a lot an hour after I've left. So like, I'm that person like, I'm gone. I was there. I was at Universal yesterday, but I'm gone now. You know, like that's, I'm the queen of that. And then it's, you know, the other thing too is trusting your gut is like so major. If some things are not feeling right, if someone is cut, you're like, why are you, you know, like you really have to listen to yourself, you know? And then also I really regard stalking. It's like terrorism, but terrorism to an individual. And with terrorism, we say, if you see something, say something. So have your community looking out for you. All my neighbors know, right? Everybody knows my situation because it's that many eyeballs, right? Yeah. And the thing is with stalking, like there can definitely be like a shameful or embarrassing things people aren't so quick. Like, you got to get past that, you know, and you need those eyeballs. Just like, wouldn't you look out for your neighbor? Wouldn't you look out for your friend? You know? And so we definitely doing that. And then there's like a lot of tech stuff that people don't realize, like don't click on links that are suspicious. Like, you know, yeah, if I see 50% off Sephora, I want to click it, but you might be getting into the GPS on my phone. You know, same with turn your location services off unless you absolutely need them. Like, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah, that's the thing that I know you and I talk about quite often. Like the easiest thing is really that address. Listen, have I been a detective for quite some time? Yes. Now you and I'd be like, Lenore, I need something. You'd be like, what's their name? We can figure it out. Yeah. But you know what that means? Everyone else can also figure it out.
For a dollar.
Listen, also fun tip. Google people before you go on dates with them from the intranets, because my mom has told me something my whole life, and is you will never know anyone 100%. I don't care if you've been married to them a billion years. I don't care if you just met them and they are the love of your life. You met them, you fall in love a month ago. Great for you. You don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
Look them up. I implore you, please look them up. Because I've looked people up and be like, how many times you been to jail? What you did? Okay, I'm sick. I can't make it. Like,
yeah, I do look at people all the time. And it's really shocking. Like, and again, like, not the much. But like the violent felonies that come up, like I'm always have to tell people, like, don't do it.
Don't do it. So this is an interesting question that I've been thinking about. And even in the shit of it all, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we are talking about the trauma within these things. What have been the highs and the lows?
The highs for me have been meeting people like you, because it's like these really special friendships. And it's not that we're bound by trauma again, but like, there's an amazing community out there, and there, it's like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, there's just, that's been the high, has really been my friendships. Like, I have these, like, not that I didn't have good friendships before, but like, my friendships now are real and they are deep, and my friends show up for me, and I hope I show up for them. So I think that's one of the highs. And then another, like, a personal high is that this group of activists, we're about to go to the White House. Like, what?
By the time it comes out, you've already been at the White House. So go look at Lenora's socials to find out what happens.
Yeah, I keep laughing that because everyone's like, go be on TikTok. And I'm like, well, I'm only going to do it from the White House for the first time. You know, they're like, hi, I'm here. You know, that's kind of amazing, right? And another high, if it will, is like, I have a lot of friends who've been, and I have something myself, but we'll get like involved in legislation, right? And it's what the reason why it's a high is that all of us, this is not the journey we thought we were going on, right? Like, right. And then to see these people that I really care about, like, they did the thing. They did it. Like, we survivors are capable of anything.
Yeah.
And that always blows my mind. Just that, like, you know, it's, you know, the lows, I mean, the low is, there was a period of like 2 years where nobody saw me. I would not leave other than walking my dog. And even that was like, I had like a weapon in my hand, high anxiety. My psoriasis was like all over. I was messed up. And it was right after my dad died. Like my stalking started while my dad was sick, and my dad was my best friend. And so it will always be hard for me because I didn't want him to go out knowing this thing. Right. So not that I was lying to my dad, but I wasn't disclosing what was happening to me. So the trauma of losing my father, and then literally being, and back then I lived in a really tiny studio apartment. Like, I was so scared all the time, and anybody could have come and just gassed me through my door, like he told me, because I lived right off a popular street. And mm-hmm. Because I lost my job, I didn't have the money to leave. And I was just trapped, and I was scared, and I was like going into debt, and my health was not good. And I'm like, I'm going to die and nobody cares. And they use this line on my 48 hours. I said, it was like having your head held underwater and screaming and nobody could hear you. And that there was a several year period of my life where that was my life. Like, I will never get years back. Those years, they're gone. I don't have them. So that was definitely my low. And then I think there's also something that happens where, you know, if you're so fortunate as to grow up where you think that these systems, I know a lot of people aren't this lucky, but I grew up thinking like I would be okay. And if I needed help, you call 911. You know, you think that. And then when you actually learn how these things go, right? Mm-hmm. And you realize,
Bullshit.
Right? I'm not protected. None of us are protected. And then you meet other people and you like start to really care for them, and you see the stuff happening to them, and you're like, oh my God, nobody's safe. It's the feeling like we're just, you know, like it's like there's no lifeguard on duty. You know, it's like, we're all just like here swimming with sharks. You know, like, it's just,
it's really true.
Scary. It's really
such a visual though. Mm-hmm. It's like a visual of you're just like, la, 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 help. No.
Yeah. Yeah. You
and they like, or they walk away. You're like, ha, hello, what?
Oh yeah. Oh, or they make fun of you as they walk away. I had that too. You know, so you know, it's, I think that's the hardest, is when you realize like the world is not kind. There's beauty in it, but the world is rough. It is dark.
The world is fucking awful. And unfortunately, there are people like us that know so much. Yeah. Do you ever think, you do, and I know you do, but these people don't know that. You and I have, we talk all the time. Do you ever just think you just know too much?
I know, like,
I just want to be ignorant. That shit looks so nice. I want to taste it. What's that like? I miss it.
I mean, yeah, no, I know way too much. And that's the other thing too, because survivors will come to me and they'll have, maybe they saw like a news story, and maybe the news story was like, because I haven't gotten to do the documentary I want to do. I've been close, but I haven't gotten to really tell the story. The
It's coming.
We hope. So they'll see something, and maybe it's like they'll, you know, they're struggling, and they see that, because again, everyone thinks if your person goes to jail, you're good, right? And then they'll go, oh, you know, how, like, whatever. And I just sit there, and it's like, it reminds me of like, as a little Jew, when I was a kid, and I would like be the person, be like, Santa isn't real. Like, I was that little jerk that like, that, you know? And it's like, I constantly feel like I'm going, Santa's not real. Like, you know, no, that's not actually how that's going to happen. And no, that doesn't really, like, even stuff like when I had the ankle monitor on my stalker, like, I thought that they don't even check the ankle monitor. Primary corrections doesn't check. They only check after the crime happened. There's nobody like actively looking, you know? Yep. So there's so many things where I do know too much, you know too much. And then it's so hard for me to tell somebody when I want to give them hope. And there are things to be hopeful about, and we need to live with hope, but
you need it.
I also have to real talk people all the time, and having to real talk people is really hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
Because you have to tell people, everyone's like, you should get a restraining order, you should do this. Do you know how fucking hard it is to get a restraining order? Oftentimes you have to be harmed first.
Right.
And it's a fucking piece of paper. And right. I know so many people who have had occurrences where their person who's trying to harm them is like, that's a piece of paper. By the time they get here, you'll be dead.
That's right. You're right.
And you know, you and I are able to say these things and also know that this is so active and active within us and around us. So how do you take care of yourself while all this is happening daily? You're watching a fucking war with Jews. Yeah. You got to be outside. You are a woman. You have like, how do you take care of yourself?
Yeah. And I mean, it looks different for everybody. You know, I'm definitely
just you specifically.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it's my dog. I don't think. Do you want to say hi, Hollywood?
Show this bitch. Show this.
I always have a dog.
Now, this is Hollywood. She's got feelings. She's got a lot of feels.
Very talkative. It's me. I force myself to wake up and go outside and breathe fresh air and be accountable, because I have this little lunatic here. I always have a dog. I always like, I'm all about the comfort that animals bring you and the joy. That's one thing that I do. I have a lot of amazing friends. I'm very fortunate and, you know, to be able to have those conversations, and that's so meaningful. I have a partner who's great, but I also like, I'll just say it. It's too much to put on one person, you know? So this idea that some people have, whether I'm monogamous, but lots of people are poly too, right? It's, you can't like, yes, like spread it around is what I'm saying. Like if you have partners, like they should be great, but like, it would be insane for me to think that my husband, Henry, is just going to like be the thing to make me okay. This is not true. So I have him, I have my amazing friends, I have my dog. Sometimes I do yoga for survivors, which is like really nice to have like a community. And we don't even talk about what happened. We just all hang out together and it's cool. I'm very, very, very into self-care. I love getting my nails done and my hair done. That is like a time where I've taken that hour or whatever to just do that thing. When I can afford it, I love massages. Oh, do I? Oh, so good. And one thing, it's not my thing, but I just have to bring it up because it's the one thing that I see with my husband. For him, it's roller skating.
He loves to skate, honey.
He loves to skate. And like, whatever that version, for me, it's a little dog. For him, it's a roller skate. Like, just find that thing.
Find your thing.
At peace, you know?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. You have to. You have to have some kind of out, something that feels like it's yours.
Yeah.
Like, rooted in, not necessarily selfishness, but just rooted in like self-love, I think, because this process, as we've talked about, is like so trash. Like, it's so trash. And the trash that has happened has led you to create your company. Tell us about this company.
Yeah.
Tell us about all the, well, two. Technically,
I have two companies.
Yeah, tell us about them.
Two companies. So the first one, which I'm so happy that you are a part of, you are like my it's called Lenora Claire Consulting, not because it was supposed to be about me. I just literally thought it was going to just be me when I started it.
It's like 30,000 people. I'm kidding. It's not that many, but it's you have a thick.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be me. And I was originally, I was inspired by intimacy coordinators and learning about the stuff that they do and how awesome that was for scripted. But I was like, wait, so on unscripted, so like if someone is portraying a sex assault survivor, they get this consideration. But if you're a real one, you get shit. So I thought, okay, what if I could kind of create that role, because I could be like a victim survivor liaison with production. I could be the intermediary that looks out for the victim survivor, but I'm also a producer. So I can speak that language and I can kind of like be this intermediary. So that's what I thought it was originally going to be. But then I started realizing, okay, that's onset work is just like one thing. With production, there's so much more, like the negotiation of what questions you can ask people and training the producers and all that kind of stuff, which is the work that we got to do. I don't know if we can talk about that doc yet, but we'll just say we did a thing that's going to be a big deal. It's about a very prolific predator in the music industry. Shit. And it's many, mm-hmm. many victims. And it's going to be a UK production that shows the US as well. And we got to work with those survivors and the amazing team there. And let's just tell people it works well. When you hire us, it's better for the survivors and it's better for the producers. It's just better for everyone. So, and then the other thing that the company does is I got really turned off. A lot of these shows just have any random ass ding dong as an expert, like what? You know? And so we actually have like amazing trauma-informed, you know, homicide detectives, forensic psychologists. We have like Amanda Knox is part of the company. So if you're doing a project on, you know, wrongful conviction, talk to Amanda, actually talk to a person it happened to. So we have that and it's great. And we really have covered all areas with the experts, everything from sexual assault on campus, sexual assault in the military. Like we have the people that you can talk to. So we offer that for on camera or for consulting. And just, there's just so much stuff that we can do. And in a weird thing, this was not what the company was intended for, but there was a parole hearing for a very awful stalking case. And I provided experts for that parole hearing. So open to that too. If you need experts in that space, like talk to me, we'll do stuff. Yeah. And people keep asking me to provide public speakers. We are not a speakers bureau, but I have set people up with those gigs. So I don't know if somebody is doing a true crime production or a documentary production and they just want to do better, hit us up. We will work with you in whatever capacity makes sense. It's a mm-hmm. very fluid business. You know, as I said, it started with me and now it's a bunch of people. Like, so we, you know, we have the thing and, you know, we do a lot of newscasts too, is the other thing. I'm constantly providing experts. Like I just did one on a stalking story in Fresno. Like, so yeah, if you want credible, trauma-informed, amazing experts and not just some random person that thinks true crime is interesting and does
a fucking TikTokers, y'all, TikTok. Right. I love you. And I also, what the fuck are we doing?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's weird. So that's that company. And then the second company I have is Special K, which I did not name it, but that's kind of funny. We are a PI service. It's
Special K.
It's called Special K. And I was like, we're not a bunch of ravers. It's two amazing former law enforcement, including Cletus, who I mentioned before, who was my one good detective. And we specialize in stalking cases as well as missing persons. That's kind of all that we do. Like if your man cheating on you, we're not in a car watching him. We don't do those cases. That's fine. But, and the reason why is that, you know, we'll do all the things that police can or won't do, right?
Yeah.
You want to monitor your stalker. You want to have help with your tech. You want to have a security check of your home. You want us to build a case and literally wrap it up in a bow and then bring it to your detective who won't do it. And so we do all the work and then they can just walk it across the finish line. We do that, right? Yeah. Same with missing persons, because I didn't know this before working with these guys, but like a lot of missing persons units are being closed around the country.
Let's talk about that. What about these laws that are dissipating that we don't, the laws, the different like groups in the different departments that are dissipating and not telling people? You and I, again, we talk about it because we're pissed often.
Yeah. So we'll just use Los Angeles County because that's where I live. You know, you're close by. And LAPD, we closed sex assault division 3 years ago. People are not aware of this, you know, so it's, there's only like four places you could even get a rape kit. And if you go, like, yeah, they'll investigate, but it's not a specialized detective. There is no Olivia Benson from SVU sleeping at the headquarters to solve your case. Okay. That's not a thing. They closed cold case. My friend Stacy used to run cold case. So if you're an old crime, like literally, maybe it is good if some podcast tries to look into it because nobody here in LA is doing anything for you. Yeah. And there's some talk about missing persons being closed. Another thing that I've learned is that in a lot of areas, especially like the bigger cities, missing persons, they only really look if you're a child. If you're not a child, they really don't look because, again, they're there to investigate a crime. And so if they don't know a crime has been committed, you're just missing, then there's no crime. There's really nothing to investigate in their mind. And so you're just not being looked for. So families have to hire PIs like my company to come in and do the, to look. So that's
so wild. Again, the reminder of like the police. Here's my thing with policing, and people could be mad, not mad. Let me tell you how many fucks I have. Policing was created because of slavery. It was created to keep people in line. It wasn't to prevent anything except people not doing what they wanted. So when people say the system is so fucked up, it's broken, honey, baby, it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's functioning in the needs and the ways of oftentimes those that cause us harm, because we're smart enough to know that also there's so much crime that happens in these police and sheriff departments. There's gangs in these departments that are harming other people in the departments. So I say all that to say shit's functioning and we're losing the support that we should just have as humans. But also people shouldn't be shitty, but that's another day. But it's real and it's actively being taken away from us silently, and we don't know it until we need it, and then it's too late.
Yeah. And then people always ask me how I feel. And like, it's so complicated for me because I do know some good detectives who are really great people. And I've had some really bad things done to me, like bad. Yeah. Like when I had my DV assault, which I never talk about.
Yeah.
One of the sheriffs hit on me. Okay. So I know I have amazing friends like my friends Nako and Stacy and Cletus and Leo who are retired. And they're incredible. I've seen it all because they are people, and there are good people and bad people. So like, but the problem is when
they overshadow.
Right. And the problem is it's like the culture of a lot of these departments and just the people that it's attracting. It's not so like, I just say it's really complicated. But the thing is, when they're in this position, even if there's one person who's doing harm, which we know it's way more than that, but let's just say one is too many. Right. And that's the problem. And then the other problem is people always ask me, like, what's the system to replace it? And that's really like, that's a
whole thing. We don't know.
Right. So we don't even know what that could look like. So these are really complicated things. But the fact is that we are not being served the way that we need to be. We are not being protected the way that we need to be. Do I have a solution for some things? Not all things. These are messy, messy issues. But definitely like even I, you know, it's complicated for me having this PI company because it's the idea of privatizing. Right. Like, yes, it's amazing. I look at this as like a pilot program, right? And it is a pilot program because it's what I want the police to do that they don't do, right? But the problem is, it's like you got to pay for it because these are services. Like, so if I call the tech guy, right? Like, you got to pay the tech guy.
Yeah.
Or one, but ours is a man, so I would call him a tech guy. But you have to pay for that, right? And so it's like, why can't we get the, maybe in DC we'll figure that out. But if we had grants, so now it's this weird thing where I have these like privatized solutions. And my personal hope is that we get to a place where we're making so much that we can make it sliding scale or like just really take cases that we just want to if they can't afford. But that's, you know, that's just what we're looking at right now. So it's weird for me because what we're doing, we are successful. And I also want to say that we're serving a lot of sex workers, and we're doing that because sex work community, I don't blame them to not want to deal with the police, right? So, So we have a lot of our clients are OnlyFans people. And the reason why, and I think we've talked about this, is like, especially if you're a larger OnlyFans creator, you have a team that's responding. So you may not even know who your problem people are, right? Yep. And so we can monitor them, we can deal with that. So, you know, that's why I have the second company, and we're licensed in California and Vegas. Again, a lot of sex workers in both states. So that's kind of what we're focused on, doing those like stalking cases. And we've had really good luck. We've been able to do, it's been great. It's just kind of messed up to me. Like, I'm sorry, but you have to pay for this because there's a lot of experts on a lot of things, but it's worth it.
I know. I mean, we're, you and I are constantly trying to figure out, that's why I created Tending the Garden, different ways for us to continue supporting people on other people's monies, you know, on other people's monies. And let's be realistic. That's what we're doing. I just sniffed some tea tree oil, y'all, because balance, it's good to keep yourself balanced. Okay. Question. I just added this question to the show recently because you're the first guest. So what is the wildest thing someone has texted you? We'll add DM, texted or DM'd you lately that you can actually share.
Oh boy.
I know.
I can share.
Because I had to specify with you. You can't.
Like a funny one or a scary one? Because I get both.
Whatever feels wild for you. Whatever your wild is. There's no levels to this. We're open-ended here.
Oh, wow. I'll do a funny one. I guess it was kind of, well, I don't even tell that one either. Cause that's like my husband would get embarrassed. Damn. Give me a second to think about that. Cause I really have to put it through my filter of what I can.
Yeah. You can take a look at your phone. You could check your DMs, whatever, you know, think about it.
Oh, this is kind of sweet. I kind of liked it. Did I tell you about the lowrider car people?
No, is this wild? Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was really cool. Like, this guy wrote me, and he was like very like classic, like LA cholo guy. And he at first it was like, you know, like, I don't know this man. I don't want to talk to any man I don't know.
And, absolutely, 100%.
Right. And then I got it, and it was the sweetest message. He had seen me on a TV show, and he was like, I just want you to know, my car club and I watched whatever, we all watched True Crime together, and we will escort you. With like a lowrider, like a gang of lowriders, like a whole other team.
I want this for you.
If you have to go somewhere, like, we want to be your protector. I was like, because that's funny, because I was like,
that is wild to me. That seems wild.
But I was like, that is so cool. And like, I was like, I love that. Like, just me showing up with like just a ton of lowriders and just being like my security detail. Like, I loved it. And also, I love when men want to show up in a good way. And the guy wasn't hitting on me. It wasn't like that. It wasn't weird. It was totally nice. But like, that was unexpected. Because again, I just felt bad because I was like, why is this man trying to talk to me?
I mean, because so many times it's some fuck shit, let's be honest.
Yeah. And it was delightful. Cool. And he was just like, you know, I have a bunch of sisters, and like telling me his whole story. And it was just really nice, you know? Yeah. And he's like, because he's from LA too. And he's like, oh, you're from LA, I'm from LA. Like, how can we, you know, whatever. And he also said that he would do the same, because I do court support where I go to court. He's like, we will show up, you know, we will. And I was like, very cool. Very cool. So that was kind of like fun. That's wild. That was fun. That was a fun one.
I love that.
Yeah. That was like a positive, like, cool.
The rarity of like nice things in there. Before we wrap up and I release you back to the wild, is there anything else that you want people to know? Like, what's something that would surprise them about you, or like a tidbit that you want to leave people with?
Surprise them about me. Well, you know, it's weird. Like, my identity has changed so much, right? Like, there's who I was, and now people kind of like
a showgirl, but out the show.
Yeah.
You were.
People I guess it's, you know, I don't know. I guess the thing about me, just people just, yeah, it's like, you know, the real me, but I realize, like, you know, in that, okay. So like, here's an example. Like, prior to my stalker, the thing I was really, really known for was I did this show called Golden Girls Gone Wild, which is erotic depictions of the Golden Girls.
So cool.
It was so cool. And it was huge. Like, I had 2,000 people at the opening. I was one of the first stories on TMZ. And like, that was something that I loved. And like, I was working on a documentary about the history of the fart joke. Like, literally, that's what? What I was, Yeah, like I was so like I found out that the oldest fart joke goes back to ancient Sumerian times, and women would like run and sit on their husband's lap and fart and run away. And so the reason why was that so there's a lot of historical fart stuff. Like, so the fart joke to me is the great equalizer, because whatever culture, religion, socioeconomic background, farts are funny, right? It's like the one thing that just like, it's universal. It doesn't matter what era, like. And so I was like, that's really interesting that we have this one common thing that like everybody could, is funny. Like we should like really unpack that. And I could tell you all kinds of like really fascinating cultural references around fart joke. I was like literally working on this fart joke documentary, and I got a famous guy that I was dating did some animation for, like, people would have loved this thing. And like, I had to put that project on hold because I'm like, I can't be the lady going to the White House and doing a fart doc joke thing. Like, it's like this weird duality. And it's like, I guess I just wish people could like let go of that. You know what I mean? A little bit, and just sort of be like, yeah, the lady that has, you know, golden shower girl paintings can also be the lady at the White House, because I am. And just sort of allow people to just like exist, you know. It's like we, especially even friends who like, you know, were progressive or whatever, there's still these like weird little judgments that we make of people in society. And it's like, I just think that we're just so complex, and we're at a place in our life where like, you know, we should just be able to just be all the things and be like, okay, sure. You know? And I guess that's just one like weird thing I'm kind of struggling with now, especially as I like think about when people, because people don't really ask me about myself. They ask me about the work I'm doing. They don't really like ask me about me. And it's like, I wish that I could be like, Jim, come see my fart joke doc. And let me tell you about this. I wish I could just like be that, you know? And like, it's just, it's kind of hard. Like, you feel like you have to give up a part of yourself to pursue certain things and be treated a certain way. And like, even like, as I'm getting ready for the White House, like I've spent way too long, like thinking about like, what I can wear to like deal with my boobs, you know, like, oh
yeah.
Dumb, but like, that's, you know, so it's just, anyway, that's like weird. That's probably not what you're asking for, but that is just something.
It is.
Just that's the honest answer, you know, just sometimes we're weirdos, and you can be a serious weirdo, and you can be all those things. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I think this, for me, the question is asked, because the reason I asked it is because I think that there is so many misconceptions about stalking survivors, about true crime survivors, about people that have large breasts or loud and vocal. And like, these are normal people that have just chosen this fight because it chose them first. And we decided to fight back in this way. And so I think that that is so powerful. And also, you know, like, how do you see yourself? Because we always see ourselves differently than the way other people see us. Like, I'm like, oh my God, Lenora's amazing, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, okay, so blah, right? Like, we have these conversations where we hype each other up because we also need it. And I think there's that reminder of like, community is so needed in these different areas of our lives. And not only like when we're dealing with the crime stuff, but like everyday life, right? Like, we have been grieving different things throughout us knowing each other, and the things that have happened to us don't stop. It's just more shit's added on top of it.
Yes.
The shit is just like, okay, I thought this is not a break. Okay, that's fine. I don't even like breaks. It's fine. I'm allergic. You're right. Like, it just keeps going. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
Well, we have done it. This is just a peek into what our lives are like together. This, because we can't let y'all really into all our business. But before we go, tell the girls, guys, theys, and nims where to find you and like what they should be looking out for.
You can find me. I do Instagram. I'm actually, even though that's like the old people one, I've heard like people, that's not.
Is it? Don't do that. I like Instagram.
Yeah. No, yeah, I love Instagram the most. I'm also on Facebook. I may or may not be doing the TikTok. I don't know. I'm a little afraid of it. But you could just find me.
You call it the TikTok.
It's like a lot. I don't know. Like, people send me the videos a lot, and like, it's just a lot for me. I don't know. But you can, I'm pretty accessible. Just Google my name. And what was the second question?
That's it. Where do they find you? Is there anything you'd like to share with us that's, you know, is upcoming or anything like that?
Just that I guess they'll be listening during National Stalking Awareness Month. And, you know, I'm not the only, you know, advocate activist out there. There's a whole bunch of us. Everybody's story is really different. There's a lot of people whose story is former intimate partner. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. And there's just some really great voices, and, you know, I can help send, and also I'm happy to, I guess what's, I'm still at a place, or maybe a time where I'm just like too tired. I'm still at a place where I can still receive, people writing me when they need advice or help. I'm still there. I'm still, some days are harder, but I still do that. So if you have questions or you need advice, or, you know, you just need some resources, unfortunately, there's not a lot of resources. There's stuff for DV, but even that's really underfunded and exhausted. But if you need help, or you need, you know, like you just facilitated a
stop stalking
group. Okay.
Yes.
So people can just reach out to me, and like, I will write you back. I will write you back. And, you know, I just want people to know that they're not alone. It feels alone. And you probably had somebody say something that made you feel worse about the situation. And I'm sorry for that, but like, I will make space for you to the best of my ability, to talk.
I will upgrade that as her friend. Please put at the top, I might need help. Maybe a trauma warning. Maybe a little short synopsis before you get into it. As someone else that gets emails sometimes when you're not in the right headspace, please respect us as survivors as well. We want to help you, but also we might be in some shit that day. And so as this human's friend, just do a little boop before you get into your journey, so that she can also be in the right headspace to show up in the capacity that you need.
As always, you are 100% right. That was a very important thing that I just, yes. that's the other thing too. Like, just one thing I will say too, like, I know a lot of survivors, they want to make purpose for what happened to them, and they want to get into advocacy or activist spaces. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely guilty of jumping in too early. Like when I told the story of like, I was getting people restraining orders when mine still like was granted, but I couldn't serve him because he was all over the, you know, like I jumped in, and I'm at that time was really humbled because I realized like emotionally, like I was able to help people. I was successful in there. But like for me as a person, like I was still really in danger. And, you know, it's just to really be aware, you know, because we want to help and we want to find meaning. But also you have to like, and again, we may not know until you're in that position where you're like, oh, I'm not as healed as I thought I was because something happened. And now, you know, so it's just, it's, there's room for everybody. And if you want to, you know, be an activist or like, that's awesome. But also to be really gentle with yourself, because, you know, when you're taking on other people's traumas, as you just said, like sometimes you have hard days and sometimes that's not the day. And it's okay to say to someone like, I will get back to you when I can, you know?
Yes. And we're going to end it in that positive note, because take that and like run with it. Absorb true crime in a respectful manner. Ask yourselves those questions. Don't just slide in people's DMs with your trauma, and take care of yourselves. Thank you so much, friend, for doing this and sharing other parts of yourself with us.
You're the best.